Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Vincent, you're still a little fired up about these high school walkouts, about the gun control, and apparently there's some kind of an event that is scheduled for here, at the very least in Keene. Is it a national event that's happening this Saturday from 10 until noon Eastern time? Do you know?
I'm not sure if it's a national event on that certain day, but it's happening all over the country.
Okay,
in different communities.
That sounds like it's a national event if it's happening all over the place.
all over the nation.
I mean, just like different ones are sprouting up. I mean, I'm sure a lot of them share funding from the same group.
You told me about this earlier this week. You're intending to go there to this particular event and report on it for Shire Free News, which is your, was it gab.ai?
No, there as an assignment.
Oh, okay.
Just
somebody's
homework.
Instructing you to go there.
It's on my own volition. I have to do a certain project to show I know how to use a camera, and I figure...
Well, I could
get tons of B-roll there. I'm not going to report on it. I'll be very respectful.
Because you're a multimedia journalist. I mean, you've got a blog, freehanover.com.
Yes, thank you.
You are taking television classes, apparently television news classes in college. A little bit good news here to start the show out with from the Associated Press. In San Francisco, the smoke was thick and business brisk at the Barbary Coast Dispensary's Marijuana Smoking Lounge, a darkened room that resembles a steakhouse or upscale sports tavern with its red leather seats, deep booths with high dividers, and hardwood floors. There's nothing like this in Jersey, said grinning Atlantic City resident Rick Thompson, getting high with his cousins in San Francisco. In fact, there's nothing like the Barbary Coast Lounge almost anywhere in the United States, a conundrum confronting many marijuana enthusiasts who find it increasingly easy to buy cannabis, but harder to find legal places to smoke it. Because certainly a lot of these legalized states have not necessarily legalized it to smoke outdoors. You know, you can't necessarily be at a public park legally and smoke cannabis, which I think is a shame. And hopefully we're going to see that change over time. But it still sort of has that basis of, ooh, this is a bad thing. We need to make sure the children are protected from seeing somebody raising a joint to their lips. Only California permits marijuana smoking at marijuana retailers with specially designed lounges. But it also allows cities to ban those kinds of shops. Unsurprisingly, San Francisco is the trailblazer. It's the only city in the entire state to fully embrace Amsterdam-like coffee shops. The iconic tourist stops in the Netherlands where people can buy and smoke marijuana in the same place. You were at the trial today in federal court of Thomas Costanzo, a.k.a. Morpheus. This is one of your friends who's worked with you at Freedom's Phoenix in the past. He was a cryptocurrency activist, was selling Bitcoin on Local Bitcoins, a site where anybody can go and buy and sell Bitcoin by using like their bank account or certain prepaid credit cards and other different methods. But they arrested him for that. They also hit him with a felon in possession of ammunition charge as well, which you said he took a plea on that. So today was the first day of his trial. Can you kind of give us a summary of how things went?
Yeah, no, he didn't plea. They dropped it.
Oh, they dropped it.
The only thing that they threw the book at, all kinds of stuff, and the only thing that's left is money laundering, doing cash Bitcoin without permission slip. And what happened, they arrested him on 420, almost a year ago.
Right.
And they got him. They thought they had Homeland Security. They had DEA, DATF, FBI, the Mason Police Department, Maricopa County Sheriff. I mean, everybody wanted to get some on this one.
Yeah.
And they thought there was going to be a big RICO thing, but there were no drugs, no alcohol, no guns, no nothing. But he had like a bowl of, various ammunition you just kind of throw in there like quarters, here in Arizona, there were. So they just said, aha, we got ammunition. They tried to use that as pressure on them. During jury selection, they had about almost 70 people, 68 or so, 70 people. They went through it all day. They're still doing jury selection. I had to leave. And so by the end, they just dismissed like two dozen of them. Then they had the remaining. And there was, when he said, how many people know about Bitcoin? There was about IT and Bitcoin and encrypted messages and so on. It was probably 20% of the people. And they're like, damn. So they whittled down through that. And one young guy that was a Bitcoin, had Bitcoin, knew about Bitcoin, him and all his friends talk about Bitcoin as a potential juror. And they go, and the questions that they were asking was this: would you be able to set aside all your opinion when you have federal agents telling you what Bitcoin is and everything? Would you be able to set your opinion aside for theirs? And he goes, no. So he's, of course not. If I know it to be, you know, whatever the truth is,
right,
they couldn't get past that. They didn't like that one bit.
Right.
Then the other thing
so
was...
So no knowledgeable Bitcoin people allowed on the jury. My argument, and I presume the argument of Morpheus's attorney, is going to be, yeah, none of these statutes apply. So if you actually go and you look at the money transmitting statutes, you're not a money transmitter unless you take money from one person. So if I, Johnson, if you hire me, let's mm-hmm. say we're not all in the same room, you know, you're halfway across the country, you hire me to give Vincent $100 of your dollars and you pay me on top of that $5 to right. do that for you. That would make me, if I did it as a business more often than, you know, once or something like that, there's some number of times that you can do it with it where you're not considered to be a financial services business. But if that was something that I was doing as a business, I would be considered under their code a money transmitter. But if, Johnson, you were to want to buy some Bitcoin from me and I were to be willing to sell it to you, and you give me some cash and I give you some Bitcoin, there wasn't a third party involved in that transaction. I wasn't moving money around on your behest. I was just simply selling you a thing that I have. I was giving you a digital mm-hmm. good that I had possession of in return for cash.
Because they've ruled, of course, that it's property.
Well, there has been a court recently that did rule that right. That Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies are commodity.
So if I wanted to buy your old DVDs on Craigslist, I'd be a money transmitter, according to the way that they're talking about this with Bitcoin.
Well, if you were to follow their argument, yeah. I mean, yeah. That's why I say I don't think they have a
stupid argument.
If you're selling Bitcoin and somebody comes to you, even if it's just person to person,
right,
and somebody comes to you and says, I want to do X illegal thing with this Bitcoin, can you please sell it to me?
Okay, sure, why not?
I know you might need the money, but you would probably rather not have several years in federal prison, so just turn that sale down. Just tell that person, I'm sorry, but I can't help you with this. You know, hey, I think drugs should be legal, but I can't help you with this. So again, I don't know. That's the allegation. I haven't seen the evidence. It hasn't been presented in court yet. I hope that's not what happened in this case.
Are you keeping track at all, or are you familiar with this case where Dennis Acton, I guess, was running for selectman in Fremont?
I'm not familiar. I mean, I certainly my listeners aren't familiar, and I can't say I really know who Dennis Acton is.
So he's a New Hampshire Liberty activist. I don't know if he's a Free Stater, if he was here for a long time. He was running for selectman, and I guess it sounds like he just barely lost. He's a pro-liberty guy, or at least calls himself one.
Okay.
And I remember seeing his posts over the years in liberty groups in New Hampshire. He's not a recent mover, so he's been here a while at least. And he says that, I guess he says, quote, it was a cyber attack by someone on the town community page using a fake Facebook account, unquote. He says that's what cost him the election. And he's
a Facebook post,
a cyber attack.
I mean, there may be more to it. I have a little bit difficult. I mean, it's a little bit difficult to understand what he was saying in the post.
How close was the election? If you already said that, I apologize. I missed that.
No, he didn't say specifically. He just says he nearly was elected.
Okay. Basically, you're saying here, Dave, that the move to Facebook has actually reduced the amount of communications that are of value between activists in the community?
Yeah, because it's hard to go back and find the thread, right? Like with
Facebook search sucks. Absolutely.
Yeah, today, if I want to today, I can go back and find the thread where we tried to decide which state to move. It's still sitting there. And you can look at all the posts.
You're talking about on the Free State Project's forum.
Yes, yeah. It's history.
Yep.
But Facebook sort of kills history by putting all the internet traffic in a place where you can't find it.
Totally.
Later.
And there's no global search, right? So you, you know, you can't, if you're in five different groups or more than that on Facebook and you're like, oh, I had that conversation with Vincent the other day on that one group. Which group was it? And then you can go and like try searching each group for keywords that you think might have been in that conversation. But I've had times when I was searching for a word I knew was in the conversation. In a group I knew the conversation was, and it won't come up. But then if I scroll down long enough, I can find the thread. So, like, it's even if you're in the right place, searching for the right thing, Facebook search does not find the things that you should be able to find with it. I mean, it is like the memory hole.
Back in 2013, when the Syrian thing erupted, Netanyahu gave Genie Oil an exclusive right to drill for oil in the Golan Heights. Now, Golan Heights is part of Syria, right? It's occupied and run by Israel, but it's occupied territory.
Okay.
So anyway, they struck oil. They struck such a big reserve that some of the experts are saying that it dwarfs the Saudis, what the Saudis have. Okay, so like...
And when was it that they struck the oil? When did this happen?
In 2013.
Okay,
so it's been going on since then.
All right.
And the strategic, they call them the strategic directors of the board of directors of Genie Oil. Listen to this. This is amazing. We have Richard, or Dick Cheney, okay? We have Mary Landrieu, who was a United States senator from Louisiana.
You're saying
these are the boards,
these people are on the board of directors of this oil company?
Strategic board of Genie Oil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Strategic board of directors of Genie Oil. Not just board of directors, strategic. Okay.
Got it.
Strategy. Yeah, that's kind of significant here in this story. Operation Cyanide was where Israel attacks a U.S. ship, which actually happened, the USS Liberty, and murders and wounds over 200 of U.S. citizens and tries to blame it on Egypt and start World War III. Do you know how close we came? The planes with the nuclear bombs were already in the air, and 3 minutes before they were to arrive in Cairo to drop the nuclear bombs, they were called back because after the ship was napalmed, missiled, torpedoed, machine gunned. The Israelis even machine gunned the lifeboats, for Christ's sakes. And do you know that's the most decorated ship? Everybody got decorations, of course, anybody that survived and all the dead. But they hushed it up. And you know who covered it up? Admiral McCain. Admiral McCain.
Is that John McCain?
Yeah, his son was a prisoner of war, spilling the beans, doing like Tokyo Rose, broadcasting over the North Vietnamese radio to the soldiers and giving them our direct flights. He cost American lives, and in order to save his son, he covered up the USS Liberty massacre.
Your last caller, you guys had a great comment about if you want to be able to discern legitimate information from kind of garbage, you got to be able to do your own research. And one of the greatest venues that we've had in the past decade to do that was to go on YouTube. Unfortunately, there's been an ongoing purge in the last year or so that's really been taken at the high gear. One of the best people that would be able to discern the background of Israel and the government politics around the Zionist regime would be Rye Dawson, one of the earliest Ron Paul supporters. He lost over 1,800 videos.
Whoa.
And it happened under 3 minutes. He lost access to his Google account. And the problem is YouTube doesn't give the creators any recourse to get the content back. Another one that
So
if
what was
the
claim? Did he even know what the claim was against his videos?
Yeah, you're going to believe this. For every single channel that's been suspended for their political content is all for the same reason. The citation is always based on harassment. Now, you'll see a great Tim Pool video where he corrects the Southern Poverty Law Center and they gave him a channel strike where they said you were harassing the organization.
Wow. Which,
so they will flag you for the most absurd reasons.
I wonder if hopping on this dying sort of market is going to bring them more money in the long run. You know, when they eventually
when you say hopping on a dying market, you mean promoting CNN and Fox?
Well, they're promoting these dying brands that they helped. I mean, YouTube originally helped kill these dying brands. But the question is, you know, have they hopped on promoting these awful brands in time to, you know, save them and make a whole bunch of money from them? Or are they going to go down with the ship that they
helped
sink?
They're tying themselves to the anchor of these dying brands.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to go down with the ship that we helped, you know,
to sink. That's
crazy.
But
you guys have to give credit to. You guys have to get credit to the fact that Google, Twitter, and Facebook in the past 6 years have consolidated the decentralization of forums onto the internet into three places. You could post videos on YouTube. You could post things on Facebook. And for some reason, people migrated onto this Twitter platform for almost all conversation. Like the forums that were once gigantic and active. And places that were known for free speech, I can give you one that I'll put out there, Totsy, which had 500,000 members that was devoted to free speech. These things have just disappeared. And now that all these platforms have basically centralized the source of information, they can now have the control of disseminating who is able to access this information.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
I'm grateful that this has never happened to the Free Keen YouTube channel, which has been around for about a decade and has like 900 videos on it. But there have,
now that you said that.
But there have been a couple of times when videos have been targeted for takedown, and they have been taken down by YouTube. So, for instance, one of them that comes to mind was the old high school outreach videos where Derek J. Freeman and I were, and Renee, were out at one of the local high schools in New Hampshire, and I think it was actually a middle school, high school combo. But either way, we were there and doing outreach and, you know, sharing propaganda with the students. And we made videos of it because the principal tried to come and confront us on a couple of occasions and tried to kick us off the campus, called the police on us, got us issued no trespass orders. And so we captured all this on video and, of course, put that online. And somebody complained about it. Now, it could have been the school bureaucrats complaining. It could have been the parents of the kids complaining. My son's on this YouTube channel. Well, we didn't capture your kids for the purpose of making money off of them. It wasn't some sort of, you know, unlicensed use of an individual's visage without their permission. Now, you know a lot about this, Vincent.
Oh, absolutely.
You're putting together a production. You have to go around and get people to sign statements, right?
Yeah, because mine is commercial. I do, like, if you were in public, they wouldn't have any excuse.
We were
have
in public.
Well, yeah. Were you in the school or
on
were you
the
on
public
school?
Parking lot of the school?
I've been kind of following along a little bit with, you know, somebody who's been a guest on this program multiple times, Taran Lupo.
Yeah, he's on Twitch now.
Yeah, he's been, he's doing his own thing, and he's been on YouTube for a long time, and YouTube has been messing
Lupo
with
TV.
Him. You know, he's been messing with his channel and making it,
getting him,
you know,
demonetized
and all sorts of problems with that.
And he's super family friendly, by the
way. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very, very. Yeah. And, well, he's also had the same problem with Facebook. He got off Facebook a long time ago. He's
good for him.
One-upped you in that department, and that he's, you know,
he beat me to the punch on that,
a,
for sure.
A very, very long time ago, and he's also completely off. I mean, he removed his account and everything.
Good for him.
So, yeah. And that has, you know, happened a while ago. And he refuses to rely on this. So he's, you know, put up a video where he listed several alternatives
To YouTube,
yeah. So he talks about, you know, obviously he's trying to get funding through Patreon is one example. That's a, you know, where you can donate to a creator.
That's correct.
You know, where, you know, that way, if you're not getting ad revenue from YouTube or from one of those things, you're still going to need some way of making money.
If this is how you want to do your thing, this is your living, this is what you've become a content creator on the internet, and you put all your eggs in the YouTube basket, well, then they pulled those eggs out and demonetized a bunch of people's videos, and that's why you saw this massive migration to Patreon.
I want to talk about LBRY.io. So
that's
library.
Another option, yeah.
So this is a blockchain-based technology.
Some of them are based in New Hampshire, the library coders.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the idea behind Library is that it's a free, open, community-run digital marketplace. You own your data. You control the network. Indeed, you are the network. Hollywood films, college lessons, amazing streamers, and more on this first media network ruled by you. So it's outside of the control of government and copyright and all that, because it's completely decentralized.
Is it out of beta? Is it still in beta?
I'm not sure.
I haven't been following the post very closely with Library. It's something that I've always been interested in, but again, I just hadn't taken the time to look.
All I know is what I've seen, that there is a project based on this called SPEE.ch, so speech.
Speech.
And this is an open source project that they say right on there. It's like, you know, please contribute to the existing site or fork it and make your own. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's truly open. And they are a media hosting site that reads from and publishes content to the Library blockchain.
Okay.
So it's a hosting service, but with added benefit that it stores your content on a decentralized network of computers, the Library network. This means that your images are stored in multiple locations without a single point of failure. So speech, you can basically run your own open source copy of this software and set up your own YouTube.
Vincent, you brought in a story that I actually also had here tonight. I believe it's from InfoWars. The one I had is from InfoWars.
Wow. Now, for once, I'm not the one with a story from InfoWars. No, the one got is from thescottishsun.co.uk.
Probably a little more accurate, a little more local. What's the
story?
Not
necessarily accurate, but local. So I follow this. It began a while ago, but you know how the legal system works. It takes a while.
Years.
And I took interest, especially in, you know, bureaucracy like the UK. I, you know, despite it being the birthplace of common law, Magna Carta and everything, oh, how far has it fallen? I used to have a pug. I had a pug for most of my life.
Oh, and, yeah. I've seen the pug on your profile picture.
Pug O'Shea. Yeah.
Pug O'Shea.
Well, his name wasn't Pug O'Shea at the time, but I saw the old picture. You know, he's long passed away, but. And aww. Pugs sort of.
Just don't bring them on United Airlines.
Pugs.
Oh, didn't. I don't think it was a pug, but didn't.
No, it was a French bulldog. Same type of dog. Any of these dogs with short muzzles that don't breathe well.
Somebody working for United Airlines shoved a dog into the overhead bins with, you know, against the objections of the owner. And,
because the luggage or the pet carrier wouldn't fit under the seat.
Right, and they basically killed the dog.
Yeah.
At the end of the flight, when the owner went to get the dog, it was, I presume, it suffocated to death in there.
Yeah, we were advised never to bring our pug on a plane for any reasons, even in like the... but
they found it repugnant.
Sheriff Derek O'Carroll said, quote, "The accused is quite obviously an intelligent and articulate man. The accused knew that the material was offensive and knew it was... knew that the material was offensive and knew why it was offensive. Despite that, the accused made a video containing anti-Semitic content, and he would have known it was grossly offensive to many Jewish people. Mr. O'Carroll did not believe Meechan had made the video to annoy... Oh, I'm sorry, I got to read this straight. Mr. O'Carroll did not believe Meechan had made the video to annoy his girlfriend and ruled it anti-Semitic. He found Meechan guilty of a charge under the Communications Act, but he posted a video on social media and YouTube which was grossly offensive and aggravated by religious prejudice."
So in the United Kingdom, if you post a video that somebody finds offensive, it's illegal.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, not just that someone finds offensive, it's that a protected group finds offensive, or whatever protected ideology that the British government or whoever's in charge, whoever happens to be in charge of a jurisdiction, finds offensive. And so during
I imagine there's a lot of groups that covers.
Oh, absolutely. During I remember during a terrorist attack in the UK, one of the first things the police station tweeted out was, "We understand the situation. We're monitoring Twitter for hate speech."
Profane is always.
I don't know. Is it profane?
How cute and adorable Hutton
Dog
is.
No, I don't believe it is.
And so I thought I would turn him into the least cute thing that I could think of, which is a Nazi. Buddha, do I gas the juice? Do I gas the juice? Mom will gas the juice, son.
Okay, he gets down off the couch.
Do I gas the juice? Come on, gas
the juice. It gets better.
Come on, gas the juice.
Or more stuff happens.
Mom.
Do I gas the juice? Do I gas the juice?
Not really doing anything.
Do I gas the juice?
Yeah. I'm not really sure what the dog juice is. It's just him yelling, do you want to gas the juice? Saying over and over again, do you want to gas
the
juice?
The dog is getting excited, and I think this is showing you the training process.
I think this is unfair. The dog should also be on trial. They say you could indict a ham sandwich. Why not a dog?
It's time to
get up,
no
Buddha. It's time to get up. Do I gas the juice?
And now he's watching Hitler videos.
You can hear the pugs breathing in the background.
Sieg Heil.
Oh, and he lifts his arm.
Sieg Heil.
Sieg Heil. It's definitely offensive.
It's a novelty.
I can understand why people are upset about it, but it's silly. Let's talk a little bit about Bernie Sanders. He is in the news yet again. Apparently, Johnson, he's been extolling these so-called virtues of government-run, government-paid-for, taxpayer-paid-for education in Chile, of all places.
Well, this was a big thing during his campaign. Sanders blathered in 2015 that Chile was one of several countries offering free college to its students, and stated on his website, if other countries can take this action, so can the United States of America. And the article from the Daily Wire goes on to say, forget it, buddy. Go back to your pudding cup. The Brookings Institution has released a new comprehensive article examining the results of instituting free college for students in Chile. And the report found that lower income students, the class of students that Sanders and Clinton were appealing to, were crowded out of the more selective universities that they would have been admitted to before scholarship aid was increased. Chilean lawmakers adopted a tuition-free policy.
Wait a minute. Are you saying, Johnson, that a government program actually hurt the very people it was intended to help?
Imagine that. It did exactly the opposite of what it was intended to do. Huh. Chilean lawmakers adopted a tuition-free policy in 2016, and it was called Gratuidad in Spanish. Well, yeah. The government.
Like a tip.
When gratuidad was applied in 2016, it was restricted to students at the lower 50%
That's the policy.
Of the income distribution. But by 2018, students in the lower 60% of the income family distribution became eligible. All public universities are required to follow gratuidad, so they are forced to waive tuition for students in those categories. Mm. Brookings notes, an empirical study by Alonzo Bucari of MIT uses enrollment changes observed after earlier financial aid reforms in Chile to predict that gratuidad will reduce enrollment among low-income students and push those who do enroll into lower-quality institutions. Hmm. Just like it works here in the United States with, public high schools. That as neighborhoods gentrify and whatnot, that they just in the areas where people are poorer, they have really horrible quality government schools that are just garbage. But it's free.
Hey,
your kids might graduate illiterate, but it's free. You didn't have to pay.
It's even close to the U.S. in terms of college. Like when the cost of tuition and everything else started to rise when the government guaranteed everyone a loan.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.